Greetings, and welcome to the IOMS and Town Hall Discussion Conference Call, entitled Depression in MS. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Jennifer Schmerka. Thank you, Jennifer. You may begin.
Thank you, Doug. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the IOMSN and as co-chair for this program, I would like to welcome you to this month's Town Hall discussion entitled Depression and MS, which will be presented by Cynthia Irish, who is a registered nurse and a board-certified MS nurse. As a reminder, these educational sessions will be held by telephone on the third Tuesday of each month. Each Town Hall discussion will be led by an IOMS and members speaking on a selected topic for approximately 15 minutes, which will then be followed by an open discussion limited to 1 hour. These discussions are recorded and are available as podcasts on the IOMSN website at www.iomsn.org. We would like to acknowledge and show our appreciation to Biogen IDEC for supporting this project through an unrestricted educational grant. Also, as a reminder, I wanted to let you know that there are regional meetings that are focused on multiple sclerosis nursing that are being given by the IOMSN for preparation of the board certification exam for those of you who may not be certified yet. To be certified, you remember you have to have about 2 years of experience with MS patients to be eligible to take the exam. The next regional program that we're hosting will be actually in Mount Laurel, New Jersey on November 19th. And then the next one will be, the last one actually for the year, will be hosted in Oakland, California on December 10th. And each of these programs are awarding 5 hours of contact hours for continuing nursing education. So now on with tonight's presentation, I'd like to introduce Cynthia. Cynthia has been a nurse for 34 years and started working for the Rochester MS Center in June of 2002 as the unit's clinical research coordinator. She's a member of the IOMSN and the Upstate New York chapter of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, as well as the National Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers. She's on the Chapter Programs Committee for the Upstate New York Chapter of National MS Society and on the IOMSN Mentorship Program as a mentor. She actually was certified in MS nursing back in 2004. She's also served as a sub-investigator and a coordinator on many landmark exploratory and multi-center clinical trials for multiple sclerosis. She's currently involved in 7 clinical trials for MS, and she has an interest in symptom management for MS patients and does several patient programs each year for the local chapter of the National MS Society. So please join me in welcoming Cynthia for this evening's meeting. Cynthia, I'm turning the meeting over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jen. Hello, everybody, and good evening. We're going to talk about depression and MS tonight. So think of the consequences of MS as an iceberg. What we can see above the surface looks like a small thing, maybe not so bad, but what you cannot see below the surface can be huge. The visible symptoms of MS are what typically bring a patient to the doctor's office. A relapse, physical disability, sometimes cognitive impairment will bring them into the office. The symptoms of MS that may be invisible are brain atrophy, MRI lesions, pain, fatigue, anxiety, and then sometimes cognitive impairment and certainly depression. Often, depression in MS goes unrecognized and undertreated because it can be one of the invisible symptoms of MS. This makes it all the more important that the healthcare provider screen for depression at every visit. So why is this important? Depression occurs at some time point in approximately 50% of MS patients. This is higher than for other chronic medical conditions, where levels are generally around 14%, and the risk of suicide is 7.5 times higher among people with MS than the general population. Depression certainly may be reactive. You know, it could be the result of difficult life situations or stresses. We all have those. It is easy to understand how a diagnosis of MS, a chronic condition with the potential for progressing to a permanent disability, can bring on depression. Now, if any of you ask your patients if they are feeling depressed, it would not be uncommon for them to respond, "Of course I'm depressed. I have MS." Studies have shown that depressed MS patients perform worse than non-depressed MS patients on tests of cognitive function. Depression is also one of the strongest and main predictors of poor quality of life. higher than the rate observed in other chronic diseases, and I was surprised to see even higher than those with ALS. Intercurrent depression in MS populations is associated with unemployment. Those with persistent depression, they don't manage their illnesses as well as those without depression. Think about it. They're too depressed to get up in the morning and do anything, let alone take their medication, give their injection, follow up with their primary care or their neurologist. They have diminished quality of life, more problems staying employed, and are less likely to follow treatment regimens. Clinical depression, also known as major depressive illness, is serious and at times a life-threatening psychiatric condition that meets very specific diagnostic criteria. This criteria includes a profound sadness, loss of interest in everyday activities, changes in appetite and sleep patterns, feelings of worthlessness and or guilt, lassitude, and thoughts of death or suicide. Now, some symptoms that help identify depression in MS include pervasive mood change, diurnal variation in mood, what's called Beck's cognitive triad, negative thoughts concerning self, the world, and the future, kind of mood, doom, and gloom, changes in function not associated with physical disability, and suicidal ideation. I've also heard from some of my MS patients that another symptom is irritability. People with MS also have a higher burden of psychiatric symptoms compared with healthy age and sex-matched controls. I'm sure we've seen these in our patients. Disinhibition, poor impulse control, mood swings, pseudobulbar effect, bipolar disorder, euphoria, reactions to medications, thoughts of suicide, and disinhibition, poor impulse control. So what are the causes of depression? A major depressive disorder is severe and often acute mood disturbance that seems to be strongly influenced by biochemical changes in the brain. There are reduced levels of the neurotransmitters like serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine. Deficiencies in these neurotransmitters give rise to symptoms such as anxiety, obsessions, compulsions, and these are due to the lack of serotonin, increased anxiety, decreased attention and interest in life due to the lack of norepinephrine, reductions in motivation, experiences of pleasure and reward, and interest in life due to the lack of dopamine. Depression may also be a result of the disease process itself of MS, since MS damages the myelin and nerve fibers deep within the brain. So we see scar tissue on nerves can cause disruption of the signals in the brain and cause episodes of depression. If MS damages areas of the brain that are involved in emotional expression and control, so where those plaques are located, a variety of behavioral changes can result, including depression. Because depression correlates poorly with level of disability or cognitive function, this suggests that it might be an independent indicator of neurological damage. I think that's another good reason to screen at every visit. Major depressive disorder can also be a primary symptom of MS, thought to be caused by the immune attack on the brain. I read that depression seems to be less common in those with a purely spinal cord disease, so I wonder what everyone else might think about this, and what have you seen in your practice? And when we get to the question and answer period, maybe we could talk about this a little bit. Is depression seen less frequently in those who have more of a spinal cord disease? And I was kind of thinking back of my different patients that I have that have more spinal cord involvement, and they do tend to seem to be a little not depressed or less depressed. I found it very interesting that depression and MS may be associated with MS-related changes that occur in the immune systems. There is some evidence that in persons with MS, changes in mood are accompanied by changes in certain immune parameters. So what's seen is increased levels of pro-inflammatory cytokines. So IL-6-1, a tumor necrosis factor, C-reactive protein, and then circulating adhesion molecules are seen in the plasma, serum, and CSF of patients with depression. Interestingly enough, successful antidepressant therapy showed decreased levels of anti-inflammatory cytokines in some patients. So maybe if we treat depression, we can help their outcomes. Another question that I thought was interesting is their relationship between MS relapses and depression. I think it's safe to say we've all seen this in practice. There have been reports of increases in MS relapses during stressful and emotional times, was very hard to tease out in the studies that were done and in the literature that I read, kind of which came first. Was it the relapse that caused the depression or the depression that caused the relapse? And they need to look into this and study it a little further. But several prospective studies have shown that there is a relationship. Interestingly enough, though, two studies showed a possible relationship between the treatment of depression and favorable changes in neuroimmunological measures. Now, one study showed that stimulation of interferon gamma production by lymphocytes decreases in depressed MS patients as the depression improves. And we know that when a patient is having a relapse, interferon gamma is upregulated. In another study looking at the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor fluoxetine, there was a trend toward a decrease in the number of gadolinium-enhancing lesions in that treated group. I find this all very interesting. But we do have a lot of symptoms that overlap with our MS patients. So determining whether a patient's symptoms stem from a comorbid condition or the MS disease process, not an easy task. In MS, depression, anxiety, cognitive function, fatigue, pain, sleep disorders, and other symptoms are often closely related. There are many aspects of MS that can cause or contribute to depression. Fatigue can be a symptom of depression, but it can also be an MS symptom. The presence of depression can aggravate physical symptoms, such as fatigue and cognitive problems. We've all heard this from people who are depressed. They ache all over. They have a lot of aches and pains, and they tend to have more headaches. Any untreated MS symptom can trigger a cascade of other health problems. This creates a vicious cycle. Likewise, some medications used to treat, like, for example, spasticity, can cause increased fatigue, difficulty concentrating, and or depression. So it's kind of like the chicken versus the egg, which came first, and you're going to have to put your detective cap on and try and figure it out. Interferons have been associated with clinical depression. I'm sure anybody here that's worked in MS and for any length of time is aware of that. So what we see is a worsening of current depression, and new onset of major depression was seen too. But it seemed like the best predictor is a history of previous depression, although the research on this issue has yielded kind of conflicting results. Now, here at our center, it's our practice not to prescribe interferon if the patient has a history of severe depression, but we will if they have mild and well-controlled depression. So I was looking on the internet for different screening tools for depression, and I came across this Goldman algorithm for the treatment of depression in MS. It can be found online, and it's very comprehensive. Some providers might find it helpful, especially those who like using algorithms. Everybody's learning styles are a little different and what they like to use. I found it very comprehensive. But what it stresses is that all MS patients should be screened for depression at each visit with one of the following: either the two-question screen, the Beck Depression Inventory, the BDI, or the Patient Health Questionnaire, the PHQ-9. Now, the two-question screen is nice. It's brief. It can be incorporated very easily into your routine health assessment. There's two questions you ask. During the past 2 weeks, how often have you been bothered by feeling down, depressed, or hopeless? During the past 2 weeks, how often have you been bothered by little interest or pleasure in doing things? And a positive to either question is a positive screening response. So it's nice. It's quick. It's easy. It's informal. Opens up conversations so that you can dig a little deeper and find out what's going on. And it seems like it would be very easy to use and remember, and no cost. It doesn't cost anything to ask a couple of questions. And you can kind of tailor it to what you feel comfortable saying. We here don't do any formal screening, but from when I talk to our providers, it seems like they use a version of this two-question screen. Now, the BDI has 21 items. Now, that, in order for you to use it, you do have to pay for it. They're rated from 0 to 3, higher score indicating greater severity. So less than 10, no or minimal depression, 10 to 17, mild to moderate, 18 to 29, moderate to severe, 30 to 63, severe depression. The BDI has been used widely in MS settings, clinical and research settings. We use it a lot in our clinical trials. We did use it in our clinic back when beta-sarin first came out on the market. and we screened everybody before putting them on it. But I think the one thing that may prevent people from using this in practice is that it does need to be paid for. The patient health questionnaire is just 9 simple questions. A positive screen for depression is a score of 10 or more, and no permission is needed to use, copy, or distribute this one, and it can be found online. It was developed with an educational grant from Pfizer. And then one thing you need to keep in mind if you're screening for depression is you need to think about if they have a positive for suicide potential. So some guidelines for assessing suicide potential is there a plan? Is the intent serious? And are lethal means available? And are there other risk factors? So treatment. Mild depression can resolve on its own. If it's situational, if the problem takes care of itself, it can just resolve once the crisis is over. Only a few clinical trials of antidepressant treatments in people with MS have been published, and none were found to be definitive. But even with antidepressant therapy, many patients have residual symptoms. So just because you started them on an antidepressant doesn't mean that's the end of the story. They need to be reassessed again at their next visit and with subsequent visit to make sure that they don't have any of these residual symptoms, that you've got them on the right drug at the right dose. And I'm sure that we've all experienced this. Sometimes the provider has to play around a little bit with the dosing, or the drug that they tried first may have too many side effects or may not be the right drug for them, so you'll try a different therapy. But there isn't just pharmacological therapy. There's also psychotherapy, talking with a psychologist, a psychiatrist, or other mental health professional. We use a lot of social workers here in upstate New York. And I find it's very beneficial to include family whenever possible in therapy. I also believe that this is where nurses have a role. As counseling, it's a part of what we do for our patients, even if it's on a more informal setting. Then there's cognitive behavioral therapy. And this has been shown to work with mild to moderate depression. And those of you who aren't familiar with CBT, it's based on the idea that our thoughts cause our feelings and behaviors, not external things like people, situations, and events. Typically, both talk and CBT are used together. It's a highly instructive nature and makes use of homework assignments. And people, I feel, are very receptive to this because it's just not talk therapy, and you're just not sitting there talking with the counselor or therapist going, yeah. There's a little give and take and feedback, and you feel like you're accomplishing something because of the homework assignments. Then there's combination therapy using both non-pharmacological and antidepressant treatment, and I feel that may be the best approach is both. I want to talk a little bit about resources for our patients. There's NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and they have a website, NAMI.org. They provide support and public education, and they want to focus on educating America about mental illness, and they have a lot of educational opportunities, and local chapters can be found online. There are many local chapters all over the country. And then you don't want to forget about the local National MS Society chapter, the MSAA. They may be able to help with referrals to different mental health professionals. Then there's support groups, online groups, and religious organizations. So there's a lot of support out there for the patients, and they have to find what fits for them. So a little bit about medications. There are numerous antidepressants available, and the good news is that depression does respond to treatment in our MS patients, regardless of what the cause is. SSRIs have been shown to help MS patients with depression, and as an off-label use, it may help with some MS-related fatigue and may also help with improving the effectiveness of medications like gabapentin for neuropathic pain. And I'm sure out there we've all had experience in putting patients on different medications for one symptom, and it seemed to have also helped with another symptom that it isn't specifically labeled for. They also may help to improve other symptoms of depression like sleep disturbance or irritability. So if you take a good detailed history and find out what their symptoms are, you may be able to kind of tailor the medication to hopefully what will help their symptoms the best. The SSRIs are generally better tolerated than tricyclics, although really no good control studies have been conducted in this area. I like complementary and alternative medicine. I've done a lot of talks for my MS patients in this area, and we hit a little bit on how that can help with our patients who are depressed. And studies have shown that even moderate exercise has been shown to improve quality of life and depression in particular. It's amazing what a little bit of exercise can do. And it doesn't have to be very aggressive exercise, building up a sweat, just moderate exercise. I am a big proponent of meditation and mindfulness activities. There are many, many benefits to meditation. It can improve physical and mental well-being. You can gain a new perspective on stressful situations, helps you build skills to manage your stress, increase self-awareness, help with focusing on the present. You can reduce negative emotions. There's a lot on the internet. You can join groups or you can do it individually. There are tapes, websites, and you can go to like yoga classes out in the community. We need to make sure that our patients are sleeping so that they have adequate sleep. And you might need to instruct them about the proper sleep hygiene. So you might want to, you know, ask them a little bit about how they handle their bedtime ritual, and certainly eating a healthy diet and getting enough fluids. Our patients don't do enough of that. They need to get fluids, not just for the well-being of their bowel and their bladder, but it can certainly help with their emotions. I want to talk a little bit about the undertreatment of depression. In 2009, a survey of people with MS in upstate New York showed that 74% of the respondents suffer from depression. 59% had not been formally diagnosed and do not receive treatment. 58% reported receiving treatment, but only about 11% are being treated by mental health professionals as opposed to neurologists and or their primary care. Some areas of the country, though, have limited access to mental health professionals and poor health care coverage for mental health. We have pretty good coverage here in New York State, but that's not true throughout the country. I think that most providers in neurology are comfortable with managing depression themselves, and that may be why the number is so low for those getting help from a mental health provider. I don't think mild to moderate depression requires that someone go to a prescriber like a psychiatrist. That it could probably be treated just fine in the office. But the trick is finding or figuring out when you've kind of reached your limit of what you can offer them and then you need to refer them out. Patients may lack insight to recognize that they are depressed. It may come on gradually, kind of slowly. It becomes their new normal. It doesn't register until it's overwhelming. So screening the patient may not be enough. It is important to listen to the families or those close to the patient looking for a change in mood. When I see a patient and they bring someone with them, I make sure I look at that person they brought with them for cues, sometimes not so subtle cues, when asking about mood and depression, and then that can open up the conversation. So, in conclusion, effectively recognizing and treating depression will go a long way in improving quality of life for our MS patients. Studies have shown that it is underdiagnosed and undertreated, so we need to think about it whenever we see our patients to make sure that that is something that we screen for. I take home message I got being a research nurse is that more studies need to be done. And I'd like to quote from John Steinbeck, who said, "A sad soul will kill you quicker, far quicker than a germ." And thank you.